Do you like books? I mean, really, really like books? Then you're in the right place. Each week, your host, Sam Hankin, interviews the best of today's top-selling authors and the up-and-coming superstars of modern literature. This is The Avid Reader. Here is your host, Sam Hankin.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for joining us again on The Avid Reader for our 10th year, brought to you by Wellington Square Bookshop, our bookshop. Today, our guest is Madeline Henry, author of this, her second novel, The Love Proof, released just this week by Atria. Madeline started her career with Goldman Sachs, and that gave a little context to this novel as well, I think. She became interested in yoga and its philosophy, and then she quit her job to write. And her novels do incorporate her yoga practice as well as Zen, and oftentimes push her novels forward. Her first was Breathe In, Cash Out. She's been featured in the New York Post, Parade, and has been a guest on the Jenny McCarthy Show, as well as NBC and ABC. Her next book can be previewed on @FoodFightBook, and you can learn more about her at Madeline Henry Yoga. So, The Love Proof tells the story of Sophie and Jake, two Yale freshmen with wildly disparate goals in life. Sophie, a physicist, longs to find the secrets of the universe, time, space, and why we are here, and for what? Meaning, I guess. Jake, in finance, longs to be master of the universe in the financial sense, much like the protagonist in Bonfire of the Vanities by Tom Wolfe. Both are talented, ambitious, and driven. But as I said, time and love are the pivot points around which the ellipse of this book travels. Love at first sight, connection, separation, and a kind of synthesis draw us in and keep us enthralled, which is why, in part, I read this book at one sitting. So is the universe a big block of space-time? And is there a real future at all? Or are we caught like flies in amber in one sense, or free as we can be in another? So let's find out. Welcome, Madeline. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited for our conversation.
Likewise. So as we were talking before, and you answered in our other little podcast, I was lucky enough to interview Isabel Allende. So I asked her the same question I asked you earlier, which is, what connection is there in life between time and love? And she said, I think that we love all our lives in different ways, and time sometimes determines the quality of love. I've been in love since I was 8 years old, and now I am 73, and I'm still in love. So I think that time does not alter the quality of love, and it's always present in my writing and my life. And I thought that was kind of like your book in a lot of ways, don't you?
Absolutely. Time and love are two concepts at the very heart of this. Sophie, when she enters Yale, she wants to learn how can we see time. She's obsessed with time. She thinks that understanding time will help her understand reality. And then, of course, she thinks don't go her way. She falls in love. And that changes what she thinks is the most important question to answer.
And it's funny. Also, it's funny that her mom's name is Isabel, too.
Yeah, unintentional, yeah. But funny coincidence.
Yeah. So if you had to say, and if you cared to expound on what Sophie and Jake go through, what do you think about time and love? Just as a follow-up to what we talked about earlier.
Well, I think that the realization that Sophie comes to is she wakes up emotionally much later than she falls into the gift of her intellect. So she's fascinated with time, which is pretty unemotional for her. And then she meets Jake and they have this really strong connection. And then she becomes fascinated by the emotion of it. And it feels so much more important and enormous than time used to be. And she is more interested in learning more about love. And so love for her becomes more important than time. And ultimately, she does find a way to connect them. But in my own view, I think that love makes you appreciate time. But that's not exactly how she views it.
Well, you know how when you research for something like an interview or this book, you know, you go down the rabbit hole and you start... And then you realize that 2 hours later, I'm not writing my book or I'm not you know? So I did that here. And it's an unusual way, I guess, to start up because it's towards the end of the book. But so what about this theory of this growing block universe that we just add slices? Talk about that a little bit.
Absolutely. So I was really fascinated by this real theory of time, which is that although we experience time happening in a sequence of moments and we live in one moment at a time, actually, some physicists say that all moments are happening now. And this is called block theory. And so if you think about just a brick, just think of all the moments that have existed, exist now, and will exist in this block. And that's why it's called block theory. And it's kind of a fascinating thing to imagine that we experience reality much different from how it's actually constructed.
Well, yeah, it's funny because one of the things I noted early on, you know, Sophie's kind of, she is very quiet. Maybe you'd call her introverted. She doesn't establish relationships easily. But owning a bookstore and really sucking in school all my life, it's so clear in the book that reading is so important. And most of her knowledge kind of happened because of that and having a good library.
Absolutely. Yeah. I actually, just today, I listened to your interview with V.E. Schwab, where you talked about how reading diversely is the best education. And I completely agree. I'm not a trained writer as in terms of graduate school. I took advanced English in college. But I didn't go to school for writing, but I think that I've gotten a large part of my education from reading broadly across genres, voraciously. So absolutely, reading is an essential tool. I actually also listened to an interview with Elon Musk where he was talking about all the different rocket science things he learned just reading books. And I think that feeling autodidactic is an important quality in life. And I feel like books are out there waiting to be read, and you can teach yourself anything if you have the right book.
Yeah, it's funny. I was reading about Musk yesterday, and I learned that he only asks one question when he interviews somebody for a job. Whether he says, I don't care if they have a high school degree or a college degree. He says, I just ask them, what was the most difficult thing that ever happened in your life, and how did you get out of it?
Wow. I mean, you'll learn something about people's character and how they answer that question.
He says if they answer it properly, it means they know exactly what they did and how they accomplished it, which makes perfect sense when your booster rocket doesn't land properly.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. And that's sort of tapping into the difference between what you learn in school, which is it's an academic bubble that doesn't actually touch maybe the heart of real life and all of its challenges and emotional ups and downs. And that's sort of the difference that Sophie comes to learn in this book, where she's very successful in school. She's a physics prodigy. She can square 12-digit numbers in her head and absorbs information just voraciously. But when she falls in love with Jake, it really opens her heart in a way where she begins to explore different avenues and use her intellect in a different way.
Yeah. That reminds me of when you're talking about school and bubbles, you ended up working for Schwab and your life has changed so dramatically. So you were kind of like Jake, I guess, were you?
I wouldn't say I'm like him, because I think that he is more professionally obsessive than I am. And I actually feel a lot more like Sophie, because I really identify with her emotional journey throughout the book. I did work in finance, and I do feel like I did draw a lot from my life for his path, but it's not because I identified with it. It was just because I was familiar with the world.
Hey, so it has nothing to do with anything, but have you been watching the market?
Yeah, I have. It's insane. What do you think?
I don't know. I think it was very interesting. I think that hedge fund managers kind of got what was coming to them, but I also think that they kind of cheated in the last week and got back all the money they lost.
I mean, it's fascinating to see it's now that it's happened, it sort of seems inevitable in retrospect that a group of people, this Wall Street Bets group has millions of members on Reddit, got together and used the internet to achieve something in the markets. That sort of seems like it was bound to happen, that we would sort of find an online community and win in the markets. But it's really shocking to see it play out at the scale that it has. And I find it interesting that it's become this little guy versus the man battle, which, you know, everybody is witnessing just unfold in real time.
What's so funny is I told my son to invest in stuff like that old white men like me have no idea what it is. And I'm thinking Janet Yellen probably had no idea what Reddit was. Like,
yeah, it's fascinating. I think on CNBC, in addition to the indices, their immediate points, they had GameStop stock actually in real time. It's just, it's a symbol now for, you know, the little guy winning against the man.
Yeah. Kramer missed a few days, and I'm not quite sure why he missed a few days. He says he was sick, but I don't know about that. But let's go back to selling your book, I guess. And this may sound chauvinistic, but Sophie's so beautiful. But it's really interesting the way she dresses, because she dresses in like this very feminine way, even with her little accessories and ladybugs and things like that. What made you construe her that way or dress her that way?
Well, I really appreciate the detail of the question. That was for a reason. And the reason is because I think she's very idealistic in a way that you don't generally find in mature adults. And so for her to devote so many years of her life to a really romantic research question is not practical. It's insanely emotional. And I think I reflect that idealism, that living in that made up introverted world, not completely in touch with reality through her clothing choice and the detail of the bumblebee on her shoulder, you know, the rose on her shoe. And so I really did want her to be physically childlike, to reflect that childlike mentality, which I find fascinating. And it's a very vulnerable but valuable frame of mind to really be so impractical and so emotionally driven. And I have a lot of affection for her as a character. So I did enjoy drawing those little details, and they extend to her choices. You know, she has a big sweet tooth, and she doesn't have her ears pierced, and she has these little childlike details, which I just think are fascinating.
Yeah. Milkshakes, Oreo milkshakes, like all of my children have loved.
Yeah, well, it connects back to this phrase, which is the most sure way to achieve mediocrity is to be realistic. And she achieves this massive professional success, I think, because she is so childlike and unrealistic. And she holds on to this love and these beliefs so much more than people who grow up do. So, yes, that's reflected in her clothes.
Which reminds me of the, I wouldn't normally ask it, but you really do establish it, is this nature versus nurture thing between Sophie and Jake. I mean, Sophie's parents are so wonderful, and Isabel is so wonderful. And then, it's hard not to do spoilers here, so I got to be But then Jake's parents are completely different. And you set it up that way. I don't mean set it up, but, you know, you drew it that way. Mm-hmm. For a purpose. And I think their paths diverged in some ways because of that upbringing, don't you?
Absolutely. I think that if you're really going to get to the core of your characters, you need to know exactly where they came from. And I was actually just listening to an interview with Audrey, the author of The Push, and she was talking about how which is about a mother who has trouble connecting with her newborn daughter, to put it concisely. And Ashley was talking about how she over revision and revision eventually started to talk about the mother and the grandmother of her main character as a way to better understand her protagonist. And so I didn't start out with as much backstory, but then the more that I got to know these characters, the more that I had to just infuse all the detail of where they came from, because it paints a picture of who they are as complete people.
Yeah, a cool scene was, without giving it away, is like when he first sees perhaps his dad, you know, that was kind of poignant, which also, and that kind of reminded me of when they first see each other, Sophie and Jake. So there's this immediate connection, almost visceral connection. And then there's also, I started reading and I think, this is going to be like a romance. Am I reading the right book? Because, you know, is it love at first sight? And then, of course, he has kind of like nice biceps and stuff, and chiseled features and all that. I thought, oh, no, this is going to be like a romance. And then it's not at all. But in the beginning, you set it up so I don't know why they're attracted. Did you do that on purpose as well?
Absolutely. I think that I was actually just rereading that the other day because I'm going to read it aloud for one of my events. But there's a lot that you come once you finish the book and then reread that first scene. Yeah. It takes on greater depth, but I won't spoil it. And on the romantic note, it's so funny. I see this book sometimes, people categorize it as a romantic comedy, and I'll just know immediately they haven't read it because it's so clearly not. And, you know, it's got like an orange pink cover, is like a couple on it, but people are just sometimes quick to categorize, you know, a woman writes a book and it's going to be a romantic comedy. So it's not.
You could start using your initial, you know, do that. A V schwab.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. But I'm too serious. That's not where this story went for me. So
it's funny because I'll ask you this, like I ask everyone, the cover is the cover. And the reason why publishers get to do the cover is because they want to sell the book. And so did you get to vet it? Did you design it? How did that work out?
So I saw something very similar to what it is now, and I actually have it. So for people who are seeing it online, that's what it looks like. And so I saw something very similar, and actually the original version had blackboard, equations on a blackboard instead of constellations as the background on the clock. But ultimately it was decided that was too busy. And it was a collaborative effort, but they had it almost there by the time I saw it, and then it was just a couple things. So
yeah, it's funny because, you know, I've been practicing law all my life, I've done other things, and then, you know, I got this bookstore because I love books and I wanted library letters, and I finally have library letters. But I never understood when people said you can't judge a book by its cover. I thought, okay, I'm not going to. But then every customer I have, and I say this every interview, they come in, they look at the front table, and that's every single customer judges every book by its cover. And yours I think it's a great cover because the concept of time is always fascinating to people. And and Roman numerals too.
Yeah, I guess my only worry with a cover is I feel like I'm trying to achieve so much with this book. I hope that the cover doesn't oversimplify what is actually like a really profound intellectual journey that you're about to go on. And I hope that people just see depth in it, in the cover, would be my hope. So
I think the clock really, honestly, I think the clock really does it. I mean, you know, I think that's what's going to do it when it sits on our table. So, last thing about the romance aspect of it. So how much of they're both mutually, just use the word beautiful, at least in my head.
Yeah.
So you're kind of distracted by that at first, thinking that's the connection between them. But then there's also this idea, okay, are they soulmates? Is there some chemistry between them? Do they remember each other from past lives? That kind of thing too. But it's the cool thing about it is it's all running through your head, you know, all these possibilities, at least at first.
Yeah, absolutely. The physical aspect of them is really interesting because as I grow older and as I mature as a writer, I'm more interested in flaws. And so my first two books, they feature kind of perfectionistic characters. And so you have Sophie here, who won the International Math Olympiad four times, which is unheard of. It's never happened before. In real life, you know, talk about rabbit holes. I went down researching that. And the most anybody has ever won this math competition open to high schoolers is three times in a row. And so she's perfectionistic in her intellect, both in their physicalities. In my first book, the protagonist won this international yoga competition. She can do these insane stunts. And I really was, as a younger person, taught to think that, or for some reason, I thought that people were more perfect than they are. And then the older that I get, the more I have appreciation for the cracks and the flaws and the weaknesses and the vulnerabilities. And so I see more human characters emerge as I continue to write. But that's really the younger version of me, which is writing them as beautiful people and seeing the world kind of more simplistically.
It's interesting because both of them, people could look at them as both of them being obsessed and then one not being so obsessed. This is tough, not being so obsessed later on. But I can talk about their mentors because they both have mentors. Mm-hmm. And the mentors really, and one character, obviously. And that was interesting too. It was like I just said about Musk, you know, it's like it just clicked like that. It was just, although Jake kind of unloads everything. I like the way he unloads everything before he says hello.
Yeah, well, I find the relationship across generations really interesting because it Sophie, she has this mentor who's a physics instructor at Yale, and he's really eager for her to to figure out the secrets of the universe and to answer the question, how can we see time? And he's really invested in her research. And I think it's really interesting to see the unspoken layer beneath that is because he has this insecurity as a human being for his own accomplishments. And he's trying to reach this new level of knowledge through her. And I think that's a really fascinating dynamic where he is trying to achieve his own goals through her, which he may not even be aware of, but I just like to watch that. And it's interesting for me to see him wrestle with that himself.
Yeah, it was interesting because I didn't think about it, but Peter, he kind of grows too. He grows through the book. It's like subtle, but especially when his wife comes in, where did you grab those two kids from? His kids.
I mean, I think I have. I think every writer has all of their characters somewhere inside of them. And somewhere inside of me, I just have like this really dumb teenage boy. I just like he lives in there and he just says things and it just came out through those characters. And they're basically versions of each other, but yeah, they're in there.
So you just tell me to stop if I'm doing it, but the pivotal point in the book, not the pivotal, but the most important aspect of the book is when Jake says something and he says it repeatedly. And Sophie says, I know. And why doesn't she say the other thing, which she should be saying?
Yeah, okay. So this is like a side comment to answering your question, which is I didn't know that that is a Star Wars phrase, right? With Han Solo?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. And then, you know, I think it's this really... I like that exchange between Jake and Sophie because I like to think of her not only as this intellectual genius, but as this emotional genius. And for her to say, I know, it's just her entire character that she really does discover the answers to the most important questions in life. So Sophie knows, I know. And I think that something really romantic about my idea of true love is you don't have to prove it. Ultimately, she may or may not, but she tries to. And you don't need to prove it. You don't need to prove your love to me. I know. We don't need to be together. You don't need to go through an elaborate proof of it. I just know. And I think that's a really romantic and emotional idea. And I thought it was my idea, and then Star Wars did it. So what are you gonna do?
That's the thing, is that it was nice the way you flipped it around, because usually it's the woman saying it and the guy goes, yeah, I know. Right?
Yeah. Well, guys need to get more credit in literature. Men are complex and emotional. And so, yeah, I can't just, it's not a romantic comedy written by women emoting, you know, it's like, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. My has always been that men are jackasses and women are crazy, but that's not a good thing to say either.
Yeah.
The other thing I thought about was, and you constantly pushed back at this in the book. I kept thinking, isn't there something else they could have done to manage this? Couldn't they have come up with a, it's hard to do this. Don't you think it's hard to do this without spoilers?
Yeah, it is hard. But, you know, challenges are exciting, so we can do it.
But I thought, okay, well, let's just sit down and think about this. There's lots of long distance, you know? But then I think, was Jake being selfless, because I don't know. Is that all it was?
Because I think that ultimately, because I do believe that this is a story about a true love, and I do believe it's incredibly romantic and it's incredibly emotional, I do believe that he was trying to do what is best for her. And I really do believe he was putting her first in that, even though it's incredibly sad at times and hard to understand, I think that he was putting her first.
Speaking of my idea that men are not only jackasses, but they're dumb. I remember I hung these bicycle racks in my ceiling, and then a guy, I tested them by pulling as hard as I could. And then, of course, they fell through. And yesterday, I was trying to move this TV, and it slipped. And I go, okay, well, it's fine. And then I realized since it slipped, both HDMI cables in the back broke. And I go, why didn't I just pull those out before I moved the TV? Hmm. And so then, this is, okay, a long way around. So then I was looking for a new HDMI cable. So I went into my attic, and I opened this shoebox, and there's these pictures of my daughters when they're 3 and 5. Mm-hmm. We think we were at the Crayola factory. And where you can buy all one color crayons. Like I bought a whole box of just my favorite color, like this certain mm-hmm. blue, cobalt blue. This is what I do. This is your interview and I'm so, but anyway, so I was looking at these pictures and I realized I'm still there. They're still there. You know, they were 3 and 5 and first, I was nostalgic, then I was sad because they're no longer that age and that, And then I realized it's all still there. It didn't go anywhere.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of the lesson of your book. And it is the lesson of your book.
Yeah. And I think that block theory it feels so emotionally true to me. The idea that all moments are happening now, because that's how I relate to all of the most significant emotions in my past. They're just as real to me now as they were back then. And yeah, I can look at old photos of me as a kid with my parents and just feel such a well of emotion. It's happening now. So
yeah, it's funny because when I thought of that Isabel Allende thing, and then I thought of Gabriel Garcia Marquez and 100 Years of Solitude and Love in the Time of Cholera, and it deals with the same thing. You can be in love with someone when you're 16 and then all of a sudden you're 80 and there's nothing that's changed.
Exactly. And yeah. I wanted to really encapsulate that feeling and communicate it. And so I wrote this book. And so this is that feeling. This is that feeling of I still, love you. I still feel this. I still am this person that I was. And just because we've moved on in time doesn't mean that that is less emotionally real to me.
Well, it's funny, in that, not blur, but that little summary of your life in both the publisher's website and on yours, where it talks about your books are informed by yoga, Zen, those kinds of things. Well, then I thought, okay, this book is not informed by that. But it kind of is in a way.
Yeah, the way I would view it is there are a lot of different values in a yoga practice or in Zen, and one of them is humility. And I really channeled that idea into Sophie, and I know she's a controversial character. Some people don't like her, some people do. But I really do view her as extremely humble because of all that she is able to achieve and then ultimately what she chooses. And for that reason, she's not tempted by prestige. She's not tempted by money. She honestly just wants day-to-day life with the one that she loves. And that to me is just the epitome of humility. And one of the important ideas in yoga is relinquishing your ego. And I read Michael Singer pretty, I reread his book, The Untethered Soul, which is helpful for me personally in, you know, getting rid of egotistic tendencies. And so I value that in my own life. I found that through yoga, and I try and write that into her.
I'm looking down because I'm taking notes. I was thinking about—
I'm flattered.
I was thinking about you saying honestly that some people like her, some people don't. I mean, people don't like the idea of someone, a woman especially, just giving up her dream for a guy.
Yeah, it's not a popular idea. It's hard. No. It's hard to write about, frankly. So.
Yeah, and then it's like, you know, someone will say, you're watching Jeopardy, and they say they're a stay-at-home mom. Okay, that's a lot harder than getting up and going to work in the morning. You have three kids, that's a lot harder. And you know, it's true. It's like in Zen, if you're listening to, say, Chöngyam Trungpa or someone like that, you know, it's like someone will say to you, you should meditate more. No. If you meditate, you meditate. If you don't, you don't. It's not, there's no value judgment. Not that you should meditate. It's either you meditate or you don't, and that's it, you know? And yeah, so her decision is just a decision. It's not laden with any value. Mm. And the only thing that I thought about was, I guess, well, I felt bad for Peter.
Mm. So interesting.
Why? Well, wouldn't you? I mean, don't you?
Well, no, I think he has some real issues. I think that he has not made peace with his life, and he's trying to achieve something that he thinks will give him peace of mind through her. And I think he just needs to find peace within himself. And I don't think that he's, that she lets him down in any way. I think that his battles, it's with himself, not with her.
Yeah, I know, though. It's really weird because the first time she was late and the second time, I kind of thought, she shouldn't be late. She should be there on time. I mean, that's what it's all about. And yeah, so that was, I guess that's me, I guess. I mean,
yeah.
And also he kind of wanted her to show him the way. You know, it's the same question he had. And he's thinking, oh, God, this is great. This is like the Holy Grail for me. So yeah, I mean, I guess that's why I fell into that loop. But the interesting thing about it is the way you do that with your characters is like, he was a gloss on Sophie, which gave you more information about her than it did about him. So I like that a lot too.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, I find him to be, he has some of Sophie's abilities, but he doesn't have that emotional depth and that the genius of the heart that she does. And so he's still fighting against reality to be as good as he thinks he needs to be to feel good about himself. So.
Yeah. I don't think of Sophie as having demons at all, but with Jake, especially with regard to the kid that she meets and mentors herself, that he doesn't give him any, I mean, it's short shrift. He doesn't give him anything. And I'm thinking, he's not like that at all. He shouldn't be like that.
Yeah, I think that Jake, he is fighting against an idea of the world that isn't true. And so I think that some people are very professionally obsessed and motivated because they have this false notion of scarcity. And I think of that when it comes to Jake. He sees scarcity, he sees need, he sees desperation, and it doesn't matter what his status is in the world. For some reason, he just feels like there's not going to be enough. And so he just keeps working and he keeps achieving so that maybe he can have enough. But it's really divorced from reality.
Yeah, it's funny. When they're at the party, for Lionel, and she ends up saying what she says, and that goofball guy with his slick back hair, and then the wife, like, wondering. And then I'm thinking, okay, well, there's this idea of a unified theory in the four forces. And I'm thinking, it's not so strange to imagine this as being the fifth force that would actually coalesce everything together. You know, right?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And you mentioned a concept that's in the book. I think that's one of the things that makes this book so unusual is that you learn so much about the universe and the cosmos throughout the story, and yet it has this real emotional depth. And I think it's hard to find books where you are learning and feeling in equal magnitudes. And so I was happy for that. And I wanted to invoke the idea of the universe, because it is something so big and enormous that it makes you, it fills you with this sense of awe. And that's the reaction that I wanted people to have to Jake and Sophie's love as well. So it's just, you're putting the relationship on the same pedestal as all the mysteries of the cosmos. And I just hope that people just feel that, and they just feel the awe for the emotions that people are capable of, as well as the magnitude of our world.
Yeah, I like the way that Jake, when Sophie's not doing her homework, so to speak, how he lays books like Brief History of Time and stuff like that, which he's way beyond anyway. But, you know, and then, okay, so that led me to the block universe concept. The only thing I really don't like about it, because it implies a beginning, and it kind of theoretically implies an end. And I've never gone along with that.
Yeah, there's something that feels a little bit deterministic about it. You're like, right, where's my free will? If all the moments are now, then like, why can't, then all my choices are just made for me. And that doesn't feel like how we experience life. But I think that's one of the reasons that it's so fascinating, because what if reality is just different from how we experience it? Like the flaws in the tools that we're given. I think that's cool.
Yeah, I know. So do I. But then I was hesitant about saying flies in amber in my introduction. You know, I don't want to be stuck like that. But at the same time, you're not. But then she, you know, and she was going to say something. I was just going to say something about the prize she wins. You know? And it's so nice that she does have the relationship later on in the book, and that he honors her with it at his show, you know, the main painting. And that was well done too. All right, I'm done, because if I go any further, I'm going to give everything away. This is what I do. But,
well, I really appreciate the questions, because they it's not often that I get asked so in depth about characters, and I really appreciate that, because I spent so much time on them. So, well, so I appreciate it.
It's funny, because people tell me that, and it's a compliment, but it's more of a compliment to you, because I'm reading it. That's my job, and I have to admit, there's some books that I've kind of like going like that, that I interview the person. And if I don't go like that, I know it's a good book because, well, one, I read it in one sitting, which is a pain in the ass for me, because you made me stay up to 4 o'clock in the morning and I had a meeting the next morning. So that's all your fault. And, but the point is, it was like when we majored in English, all my friends were reading like Spark Notes and Cliff Notes. And I'm going, just read the book. I mean, if you read the book, you're going to get an A, right? You get all A's. It's impossible not to. You read the book, so they ask you questions about the book.
I know. It's insane because reading is such a joy. And so to do the Cliff Notes, Spark Notes of a book, it's so absurd.
I know, really.
Yeah.
All right. Well, so, you know, I'll be putting this out there the day it comes out, which I guess is February 9th, and we should be on February 9th. And then we've already got the books on order. And as soon as they come in, they'll be stacked on the front table and in the front window.
Thank you so much. I just really enjoyed every minute of our interview, and I'm so grateful to be on your show. I really respect and enjoy your show. So thank you so much.
It's a lot to me.
Absolutely. And I just think it's such a earnest and genuine conversation. It's not like routine at all. It's not, you know, the questions I'm used to. It's just a really, I'm fascinated by hearing your conversations and being part of it. So I really appreciate it. So.
Sure. It's because it's fun.
Yeah.
You know, that's another thing about the universe. It should be fun.
Yeah, exactly.
Before you go, plug your next book real quick.
Okay, sure. So my next book is Food Fight, and I will wait to reveal more about that when the conversation about the Love Proof dies down. But what I will say is that it is about a family of chefs in New York City, and it's where great food meets true nourishment.
Okay, you'll come back?
Yes, oh my God, in a second. That'd be amazing.
Okay, great. Well, thanks again so much, and we'll talk to you soon then.
Okay, thank you so much, Sam. Thank you.
You're welcome. Bye-bye. Bye.